have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. I hope you're all having a wonderful holiday time. Tonight, we have two great mysteries for you, and then we got a little bit of comedy at the end. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to bruce@radiomasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and answer you. I always want to play what you like to hear. We want to bring back the golden age of radio, when radio was really the master of all communication. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now let's enjoy our great shows.
And now the Whistler's strange story. Brighter.
Surveying his own reflection in the glass door entrance to the apartment house, Harry Simpson was pleased with what he saw. He flicked an imaginary speck from his lapel, straightened his bow tie, tugged lightly at the snap brim of his hat. Then, slapping the folded newspaper against his leg, he entered the building. Yes, Harry Simpson had a feeling that things were beginning to break his way at last. a feeling fortified by the $137 won at last night's poker game. Nothing could stop Harry Simpson today, not even the nationwide problem of a housing shortage.
You're the manager, fella?
That's what it says over the buzzer you've been leaning on.
I understand you have an apartment for rent.
Yeah.
Furnished?
Would that make such a difference?
No. Make any difference? Old Ben Franklin looks pretty good in green, doesn't he?
Bonus,
Half of it, the other 50 goes on the first month's rent.
You're, not OPA.
Never heard of it.
Well, I guess you got yourself an apartment, mister. One thing, though. Still a couple of boxes of stuff in the place. Belonged to the last tenant. Supposed to send them to his wife in Kansas City. On something else, I think you ought to know the only reason we got a vacant apartment is...
Is that the last tenant, Frank Calder, was killed in a chemical fire last night. I know. That's how I got the address. I looked it up in the obituary. It's a death notice.
Kind of slick, mister.
Yeah, you gotta use your head if you want to find a place to live these days, fella. Yes, sir. You gotta use the noodle.
A few minutes later, you're alone, Harry, in your new apartment. And you congratulate yourself as you stroll from room to room. Yeah, things are looking up for Harry Simpson, aren't they? The future looks bright indeed. And then a framed picture catches your eye. An enlarged photograph in color of a man and a woman. You hardly notice the man. It's the girl in the bright yellow bathing suit who attracts your attention. Tall, slender, a mass of flaming red hair falling down over tan shoulders.
Wow.
Then you notice something else. Along one edge of the picture frame, a thin line of green. Puzzled, you run a nail file down the side. And a moment later, a bill flutters to the floor. A scrap of currency, Harry. But it's the amount that causes your jaw to drop. It's $1,000 bill. You hold the picture up again, shake it, and another bill falls to the floor. Another, and another. Until a neat little pile of currency forms in the center of the room. A pile amounting to $35,000.
Hello?
Hello, this is Boyle speaking, Mr. Calder. Boyle Investigations.
Who?
Joe Boyle. Look, you called me a couple of weeks ago. You asked me to check on a guy named Jameson, upstate in Denton, remember?
Jameson, yeah.
Say, this is Mr. Calder, isn't it?
Calder? Oh, Frank is not here right now.
Oh, but... not there, huh? Well, it's too bad. I ran across something I thought might interest him. It's about Jameson.
Look, I'm a good friend of Frank's. Could you give me the message?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, you see, I came down from Denton this morning. I was going to do the town for a few days. You know, bright lights, dancing girls. It does a fella good to get away once in a while.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm walking down the street when I spot this guy Jameson right here in town. You tell Cola that, huh? And tell him I'll keep my eye on Jameson, just in case.
All right. I'll tell him.
And look, in case Mr. Cola wants to reach me, I better give you my address. I'm at the Prentice Hotel, pal. It's in the book. Say, what did you say your name was?
I didn't, Joe. Goodbye.
It's all a little puzzling, isn't it, Harry? As you replace the receiver, you turn and stare at the bills on the floor. And you wonder if the phone call had anything to do with the $35,000 you found hidden in the picture frame. You wonder, too, about this man, Jameson, and why Calder was having him watched. Quickly, you cross the room... Scoop up the bill. You can run for it now, or you can sit tight and wait. Yes, wait. That's it, isn't it, Harry? Perhaps there's more where this came from. You slip the bills into your wallet, seal the picture again, and place it on the mantel. As you step back to admire the girl in the bathing suit.
Who is it? Yes, what can I... Well, hello. How lucky can a guy get?
Mr. Simpson?
That's right, honey.
I hate to intrude like this. I'm Rosanna Robbins. I was Frank. That is real.
Oh, sure. I remember you.
What?
The photograph. You're the girl in the photograph. I never forget a face. Run in.
The manager didn't think you'd mind. I just came by to pick up some things that were left.
Oh, some things, huh? For sure. Oh, no, hon.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Simpson. I didn't mean to. Well, it's just that coming back here to Frank's apartment, the memories and all.
Oh, sure, I understand.
Frank and I were very much in love. It just doesn't seem possible that he's gone. Now all I have left is the memory of our love and that.
Oh, that picture on the mantle, huh?
Yes. The only one I have of him. Had to come back for it. I wouldn't want her to see it.
Her?
Frank's wife. They've been separated for years. I wouldn't want her to know about us. I think it's best this way now that he's gone.
Yes. Sure.
Well, she wouldn't understand.
No, she wouldn't. May I look at that picture again? I'm afraid I didn't get a very close look at him the last time.
Well, it was taken on the beach last summer.
Looks like a grade A guy.
Oh, he was, Mr. Simpson, he was. I miss him so very much. I just don't know what I'll do now.
Well, nothing rash, I hope.
Well, perhaps here I am boring you, Mr. Simpson. I think I'd better go.
Well, what's the hurry?
I do hope you'll forgive me for intruding.
Any time, honey. I want that picture wrapped.
No, I'll take it to my kids. Oh, and Mr. Simpson.
Yeah.
Before I go, would you mind terribly if I walk through the apartment just once? For the last time?
You watch her as she strolls around the apartment, stopping now and then to dab the corner of her eye with a handkerchief. And then she's gone. An interesting performance, wasn't it, Harry? And you wonder just how much of a threat she's going to be. But you're not worried, are you? No, because you've already planned your next move. Half an hour later, you register at a large downtown hotel. Hand an envelope containing the money to the desk clerk. Ask him to keep it in the office safe. Then you saunter back out into the street. Take a taxi up to the Strip to celebrate your good fortune and a bright future. It's almost 4 in the morning when you decide to return. You can pick up the money at the hotel tomorrow. You climb the stairs to your apartment. And then as you reach the first floor, you stop, leap back into an alcove as a man comes out of your apartment and hurries down the hall toward the back stairs. You get only a glimpse of his face as he hurries past you. But it's enough.
Calder. That guy was Frank Calder. Alive.
It happened fast, didn't it, Harry? One swift, sudden moment of recognition, and you discover a startling truth. That Frank Calder, the man whose obituary in the newspaper led you to finding an apartment, is actually alive. You're a little stunned with a sudden turn of events, aren't you? And you struggle to fit the pieces of the puzzle together. $35,000 in a picture frame, hidden in the apartment of a man who has come back from the grave. Why did he hire an out-of-town private detective to check on the movements of a man named Jameson? Then there's Rosanna Roberts, Coulter's girlfriend. She fits in here somewhere, doesn't she? But as far as she's concerned, you find out where you stand the following evening as you're about to go out.
Yes, what the... Oh.
Here I am again, Mr. Simpson.
So I see.
Oh, I hope you're not annoyed. There was something I wanted of Frank beside the picture. A cigarette lighter. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, it might have dropped on the floor behind a chair or something. May I come in?
Well, sure. Help yourself, honey. Place is yours.
Thank you. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm sorry. I didn't know that my gleam was showing.
Mr. Simpson?
Mm-hmm.
You don't think I'm going to find it, do you? The lighter, I mean. I'll bet you think I just made it all up just to have an excuse to come back.
Well, honey, I don't know.
I think you do. Oh, it's all right, Mr. Simpson. Harry. You see, I'm a terrible person. Really, simply awful. I didn't love Frank.
Well, I sort of noticed that your grief didn't last very long.
No, it didn't. Actually, Frank Coulter meant very little to me. I suppose I loved only the idea of all that money. You wouldn't know about that, would you, Harry?
No. No, I wouldn't, honey.
You know, I think we should talk things over.
Oh, we are talking.
We're not really. Well, relax. I'm sure of one another. We could be, Harry. Aren't you going to offer me a drink or something?
Well, about the drink. Sorry, I just moved in. I hadn't seen.
Oh, of course. Well, why don't we go to my place then? Quiet and cozy. I have everything we'll need.
Well, how can I refuse?
Suppose I'll run here. Meet you there in an hour.
Half an hour.
All right. I'll start down the address for you, Harry, so you'll be sure to get there. So there'll be no mistake.
A few minutes after she's gone, you hurry down the corridor. As you reach the head of the stairs, you hear someone dialing the telephone down in the lobby. Slowly, you ease down the stairs. Then you hear Rosanna's voice.
Hello? This is Miss Robbins. I'd like to speak with Mr. Jameson. Don Jameson. What? Oh, yes, I'm certain he's registered there. Yes? Oh, I see. No. Well, I'll try again later.
You're certain you can't be mistaken. You heard the name clearly enough, didn't you, Harry? Jameson. Coulter's ex-girlfriend phoned Don Jameson. The man Coulter was having watched by Detective Boyle. A few minutes later, after you hear the front door slam, you hurry to the phone book, find the address of the hotel where Boyle is staying. Half an hour later, you're facing him across his cramped hotel room.
You see, Frank had to go out of town, Mr. Boyle. Joe.
Huh?
But he's still interested in this fellow, Jameson.
I had a hunch he would be. Yes, sir, always follow my hunches. A fellow of my line has to keep on his toes, you know.
Oh, sure. Frank told me he did a nice job for him, a very sweet job.
Well, all part of the racket, you know. Nothing to it, really, from yeah. my experience. Nothing to it.
This guy, Jameson, you've been tailing.
Yeah.
You know, Frank was wondering about a girl.
Tall? Redhead?
Yeah. Name's Rosanna Robbins.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That doll would make a woman hater tear up his union card.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. Has she been up there to see Jameson?
Oh, lots of times. Lots of times.
What is this Jameson like?
A pretty ordinary citizen, good reputation, fairly well known around. He's even buying a house.
Oh, yeah, you think he intends to marry the Robinson?
Well, I'd say they had a very genuine interest in each other. You know what I mean, pal?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
See, tell me something, will you? This Coulter, he got sort of a yen for this dish, too, huh? That why he was telling Jameson?
Oh, yeah, it's sort of a... jealousy.
Oh, I had a hunch that was it. Every time. I remember a case I had last summer. A fellow named Jeff Bellamy.
Oh, yeah.
He's the local druggist up at Denton. Well, he got mixed up with a lady sax player from Chicago.
You know, I'm awfully sorry to break this up, fella.
Oh, you have to go.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Well, look, I'm meeting a little doll downstairs in just a little while. You see, and I thought, well, she might have a friend to
meet. Oh, no, thanks. No. No, I got something on tap.
Yes, you have a date of your own, haven't you, Harry? A very important date with Rosanna at her apartment. As you had expected, it turns out to be quite an enjoyable evening. And strangely enough, not once does the $35,000 enter the conversation. Coulter seems to be forgotten, and you're beginning to think she's forgotten about Jameson, too.
We're out of soda, Harry.
Water'll do. You know, baby... I've been thinking. I'm sort of turning things over in my mind.
Harry, you sound too serious. Here's your drink.
Thanks. No, it's nothing serious. Just a crazy notion I ran into.
Oh?
I like his drink. But try it.
Let me get this out first. Like I said, it's just a notion. There's a man and a woman.
Now that is a good notion. Move over, will you?
There's a romantic interest between these two, but they're not quite happy. You see, the guy doesn't like his work. It's sort of dull. Maybe like he's an auditor in a chemical plant.
How very, very dull.
Yeah, and it doesn't pay off very well.
Drink your drink, Harry.
Yeah, so he gets an idea. He does a little embezzling, gets together a nice hunk of cash, he hides it, and knocks himself off.
You fascinate me, Harry. Go on.
Well, it's an accident, you see. Fire, maybe. There isn't a trace of the guy left. To the world, he's dead.
Isn't he?
No. He's as alive as either of us. Now, he's free of his wife, and he...
Oh, he's been married all along?
Yeah. But they've been separated for years. Let's say the wife is out west, won't give him a divorce. Now he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. He can marry the girl, take the dough, and skip.
And they live happily ever after. Drink your drink.
The story isn't over. The guy... misplaces the dough.
Poor girl.
I don't know. Maybe she didn't care much for the guy anyway. Maybe she was running around with another fella. Upstate somewhere.
Oh, really? Well, maybe this man has more dough.
Maybe. Only the way I look at the picture...
And you do like to look at pictures, huh?
Hey, you know something, baby? I figured that this doll would throw both of these boys over for someone else.
Oh. Who does she like now?
Now or any time, she likes whoever has the most to offer. Her dream boy is the gent with the Foley stuff.
You know, Harry, I think you're right. But with so much happening to our girl, how can she be sure she's getting the right man?
That's for her to figure out. But she's smart enough. After she has time to think it over, it'll come to her. Good night, baby. I got a show.
Soon, Harry, wife. Harry?
Yeah, that's only a sample. You give me a call when you make up your mind. You know the number.
All right, Harry.
Oh, Rosanna?
Yeah?
That last drink of mine. You better pour it down the sink. You might take it by mistake. I wouldn't want that to happen.
You've figured it all out, haven't you, Harry? The picture that was once vague in your mind has now been brought into focus. The pieces of the puzzle are falling into place, and the waiting game is over. It's time for action now, and you're not worried about Rosanna anymore. You're sure you know what the next move is going to be, and later that night in your apartment, you're ready for it. As the door buzzer rings and you open the door.
Hello, Frank. That is the name, isn't it, Frank Calder?
Mind if I come in, friend?
No. Come ahead. I've been expecting you.
Yeah? Look, Simpson, I don't know what you're trying to pull, but it breaks down right here, understand?
Oh, you came for the dough, huh? Rosanna is wonderful, isn't she? I figured...
We can skip Rosanna.
No, Calder. One of us will be a big man when we get through talking, but not quite big enough to skip Rosanna. She goes along with the deal. Winner take all. She doesn't really care who wins, either.
Have it all figured out, huh?
Including the fact that you probably brought a gun along. Ah, don't try that, pal. I'm not just keeping my hand warm.
Looks like you've gotten warm. So what happens now?
Well, you don't know? For a guy with a big, fat imagination, you disappoint me, Calder. So I'll tell you what happens. You let yourself wide open, pal, the way you destroyed yourself in that fire.
What do you mean?
You're dead, Calder. You haven't any identity at all. Who's gonna miss you?
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Makes it all very easy for me and Rosanna. I'm gonna kill you, Frankie. I'm gonna take you out of town somewhere and shoot you. And get rid of the body. And I repeat, who's going to miss you?
Now, look, Simpson. Can't we make a deal?
A deal? What do I look like, the leader of the bowl haircut crowd? I'm sorry, I'll take baby and the 35 grand. Come on, Cola, let's go.
¶¶ It doesn't take long, does it, Harry? You watch Coulter's body sink slowly in the mire of a swamp at the outskirts of town. You drop the gun you use in after him. Hurry back to your car for the drive to your apartment. A few hours later, going up the stairs, the whole thing runs through your mind again. Finding the apartment through the obituary, the money, Rosanna, her devotion to men with money. She'll be yours now, won't she, Harry? Because you have the money and you're in the clear. Coulter is gone, a victim of his own plan. And no one will be searching for a dead man. You're smiling as you open the door and let yourself in.
Hello, Harry.
How are you, baby?
I've been waiting for one of you to come back. I'm glad it's you, Harry.
Yeah, you'd have probably said the same thing to Coulter if he'd have come back. Well, he isn't coming back.
Oh, poor Frank.
Look, baby, we're going to have to take off. This town isn't for us anymore.
So?
So, most important, what about Jameson?
Jameson? You expecting someone?
Relax, baby. I'll take care.
Hiya, pal.
Boyle.
That's right. Joe Boyle. Boyle Investigation. This is Lieutenant Hanson.
We come in, Simpson?
The police? I don't understand.
A lot of things we don't understand. Like why you let Boyle here believe that Frank Coulter was alive.
Yeah, I just found out different. And another thing about this guy I've been following.
Jameson? What about him?
Well, since you asked me to stay with it, I never let him out of my sight for a minute. Not for a minute.
So what?
Look, Lieutenant, you're not mixing me up in that part of it.
Take it easy, Rosanna.
Look who's giving advice. Don't you know what they're trying to tell you, Sap? Frank Coulter had to be somebody after he died in that fire. He's been living a double life for over a year. That's why he hired Boyle here to see if his new identity would stick. And it has.
Look, lady, I don't get that double talk about a double life. All I know is I saw Simpson shoot this guy a couple of hours ago.
What guy?
This guy. I've been carrying his picture around ever since I started tailing him.
But that's a picture of Frank Coulter. How could I shoot Coulter? He died 4 days ago.
Who's talking about Coulter? I'm talking about this guy in the picture, Don Jameson.
Don Jameson?
Like you asked me, pal. I've been following Jameson for you, that's all. That's how I happen to see you shoot him and toss him into the swamp.
But that's Frank Coulter's picture.
Doesn't make any difference what he called himself, Coulter or Jameson. They're the same guy. You killed him, so come on, let's go.
Suspense. Tonight, we'll bring you Mr. Jack Carson as star of Easy Money.
The night I'm telling about, that Easy Money was hanging up there somewhere just waiting to fall right into my lap. I didn't even know it. All I knew was I had business elsewhere. I was playing the piano at Mario's over in Brooklyn, but that night I slipped out early. I didn't even tell Ellen. I just left. Because for the first time in 14 years, I had a purpose in life, a plan, an objective, and I wanted to think. I was sitting in Gus's grill over a cup of coffee, still thinking, when I looked up suddenly, and there was Ellen. Where'd you come from?
I followed you. I think I'll have something to eat, too. Girl can sure work up an appetite chasing a man.
Look, go away, will you? I'm depressed.
That's all the more reason you need me, darling.
The food here is terrible. Some of Gus's customers have to be treated for shock.
Let's go somewhere else.
Yeah, this is the only place where my credit's still good.
I stopped at your rooming house yesterday. Somebody said you had to move. If you need money, Paul, why didn't you tell me?
Because I'm through taking money from you.
You're only borrowing it. Look, this is a terrible blow to my pride, darling, but for the 10th time, will you marry me?
Nope.
Why not? It'd make me terribly happy.
You'd be happy for a month and miserable for the rest of your life.
Is this a kind way of telling me that you don't love me?
Mm-hmm. You're never out of my mind. By just walking in the street, I get lonely for you.
Then marry me, Paul. I'd be good for you. I'd always be nagging you and driving you to work harder and get someplace.
I'm just exactly where I belong, mauling a piano at Mario's for those lecherous leg breakers.
Oh, I know better. You know, a couple of times I was there when you stayed after closing. You thought you were all alone. I heard you playing. How did you ever get like this?
You're imagining things.
Well, you never tell me anything about yourself. Paul.
Mm-hmm?
When I stopped at your room yesterday, I saw something on the floor that kind of puzzled me.
You did?
Uh-huh. A page torn out of last week's Destiny magazine.
What's so puzzling about that?
It was all carefully folded. It looked like something you'd been carrying in your pocket. I thought maybe you dropped it, so I brought it along.
What would I want that for?
I don't know. It's just a full-page ad about the diary of Martha Lathrop that's starting next week. It says, after 10 years abroad, Martha Lathrop has just come back to America. Her authoritative books have opened the secret doors of politics. Her keen mind has alerted America on world affairs and punctured the stuffed shirts of important men. Now read the sensational story behind all her stories.
Extraordinary woman.
Yeah. Oh, well. You didn't answer my question yet.
Which question?
The only one that really interests a woman. Are you going to marry me?
I'm already married.
You're married?
That happens to men, you know.
Oh, why didn't you ever tell me, Paul?
Well, because it's something that happened a long time ago. It's 14 years since I last saw her.
14 years? And you never did anything about it?
Well, there was nothing I could do until now. Until Martha came back to this country.
Martha? You mean this woman in
the... Yeah, she's my wife.
Martha Lathrop? Your wife?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to see her tonight.
But why? In all these years, why didn't you ever...
Because sometimes marriage really seems to mean what it says. Till death do us part. I left Ellen and went up there. She was living in a big converted brownstone on Gramercy Place, overlooking the park. The door was opened by a rough-looking character who would have been a lot more convincing as a private dick than as a butler, which is what he was apparently supposed to be. For a moment, I wondered if he knew anything about me, if this watchdog might be the one person she could have told to warn him against me. But of course I was wrong. Not with her pride, not her, not Martha.
Yes?
I want to see Miss Slater.
You have an appointment?
No, but...
Then you can't see her.
Now, wait a minute.
Without an appointment, you can't see her. Nobody can see her. Miss Lathrop is a very sick woman.
Sick? The newspapers didn't say anything about it.
Never mind what the newspapers said. You heard what I said.
Well, look, just give her this watch, I'll wait.
What about the watch?
Well, just give it to her. I think she'll see me. It has her name in it.
Oh. Something you found?
Yeah, something I found. He took the watch and went upstairs. I knew the watch would work because Martha herself had given it to me as a wedding present. I knew exactly how it would work, up to a point. And if she still wouldn't give me what I wanted, I was ready for that, too. But there was something about the whole setup that I didn't get. The house itself, dark and somber as a prison. The pug-ugly butler. The part about her being sick. It didn't fit. It just didn't fit with what I knew about Martha Lathrop. I sat down in the living room to wait. I almost jumped out of my skin. It was a big bird like a parrot, a macaw or mackaw, whatever it's called, peering at me through the bars of a cage. I remembered now reading about how some big game hunter had given it to her. It was big and bright-colored and mean-looking, with a green stripe between its eyes, which gave a really quite startling impression that the thing was wearing spectacles. I was still staring at it when I turned and I saw Martha. For the first time in 14 years. She was pale, thinner than I remembered, but with the same hard, intense blue eyes, the same air of cold condescension, but something else. Suddenly I knew what it was. It was fear. A look of hidden fear that was almost shocking to me, who had always known Martha as utterly, even cruelly fearless. I was in for another shock. She didn't speak to me. She spoke to the butler.
Robert, have you searched him?
Not yet, Miss Lathrop.
Please do.
Turn around.
What's the idea?
I said turn around. Well, he's all right, Miss Lathrop.
Very well. You may go now, Robert.
Yes, Miss Lathrop.
May I ask what that was all about?
I've had some very trying experiences since I saw you, Paul.
You must have if you have to search all the callers for concealed weapons. What are you afraid of, Martha?
I'd rather not discuss it, if you don't mind. What do you want?
You're not exactly overjoyed to see me, are you?
I said, what do you want?
Well, I read about your diary. I came to congratulate
then
you.
Congratulate me and get out.
Look, Martha, that bird seems to be as bad-tempered as you are. Can you keep him out of this conversation?
This conversation is over.
Not my end of it, no.
What did you come here for? Money? Because the answer's no.
No, not this time. This time I want something money can't buy. One of the very few things it can't.
What's that?
To be free, Martha.
Why?
So that I can marry again. Oh. Did I happen to say something funny?
I suppose to some people love isn't funny, is it? It wasn't to me when I married you. That was the one bad miscalculation I made in my life.
I know. I knew that first time you went to Paris for a newspaper, I'd never see you again. You said going away would only be temporary, but as the French say, there's nothing so permanent as the temporary.
Why didn't you get a divorce then? Why didn't you think then that someday you might want to marry again?
After my experience with you? My dear Martha, what I thought of women after that isn't fit language even for your ears.
But you weren't above taking money from a woman, were you? You weren't above forging checks with my name, were you?
Well, I needed it. And I knew your vanity. That was my temptation and my safety. That you couldn't bear to look ridiculous by admitting that you had a no-good bum of a husband.
We made our bargain. I could have sent you to jail. I still can't remember that.
Now, why didn't you divorce me?
Because
you didn't want me, but you couldn't bear the thought that I might be completely free of you.
That's ridiculous.
Someone once said that we kill the thing we love.
Are you trying to say I still love you? You?
Oh, maybe, in a twisted sort of a way. Because mine was the only love you ever really had. Maybe somewhere deep in your mind you're trying to keep the bleached bones of it.
I'm not completely mad.
I wonder, Martha. I've always wondered.
Get out of here!
Without an answer? Without my freedom?
The answer's no. Never, do you hear? Never. Now, get out.
All right, Martha. But never is a long, long time. So, Martha wouldn't give me a divorce. All right, I could have stood that. But that business about sending me to jail, it was different. And I knew my Martha. And I knew that now that she was back from Europe and could do it, she still hated me enough so that someday she'd yield to the temptation and would do it. Yeah, but that was all right, too. Martha wanted to play that way, I was ready. I was way ahead of her. In a place like Mary's, the customers we have, you can get a hold of almost anything you want, if you know who to ask. So the first thing I got was nitrazine because it was the easiest and one of the deadliest. And the next was a bunch of keys, pass keys. And that was all I needed. So the next night after I left Mary's, I just waited out in the park across the street. I was prepared to wait there every night for a week if I had to. But it was less than an hour. A taxi drove up in front of the house. A well-dressed, well-heeled-looking gent got out and went in. The taxi waited. In about 10 minutes, he came out again with Martha and they drove off. A little time after that, the butler left. I walked across the street. And the third key I tried let me in the door. It was that fiend of a bird. Well, it only stopped me for a minute. I won't say I wasn't nervous. I guess anybody's nervous when they're about to commit a murder. But I hadn't any reason to be, I kept telling myself. Who was going to pin it on me? As far as anybody who knew Martha was concerned, I didn't even exist. Well, I went upstairs and found her bedroom. And on the bedside table, I found the bottle of sleeping pills, just as I expected. She always used them, and she was the type that always would. Very carefully, I took each little capsule apart and emptied its contents down the wash basin in the bathroom. And I filled each one up again with nitrazine, enough to kill a horse. I was down at the bottom of the stairs again when a light went on in the vestibule. She was coming back. I had just time to slip behind one of the heavy curtains in the living room, but that was all.
Martha, to suspect me of all people.
Please, Martin, I would rather not discuss it.
Martha, you must realize that these obsessions are symptoms of a sick mind.
I said I would rather not discuss it. Good night.
She'd had a quarrel with someone. That was good. Now I knew she'd take the sleeping pills. She went directly upstairs, and I waited. 5 minutes later, the butler came in. But he went straight on to his own quarters somewhere in the back of the house. So I waited some more. It seemed like hours when I suppose it was only a few minutes. I wondered if she'd taken the sleeping pills yet. I wondered if I'd hear her when she fell. Finally, I didn't dare wait any longer. I slipped out from behind the curtain and crossed the living room. And I just closed the front door quietly behind me when a light went on inside. I pressed into a corner of the vestibule. Through the glass panel of the door, I could see Martha in a negligee coming down the stairs, and she had a bottle in her hand. The bottle of sleeping pills. For a second, I thought she must have found out somehow that she was going to call the police. Yeah, but she wasn't. Moving like a sleepwalker, she crossed the living room. She was dumping one of the pills out of the bottle into her hand, and then she stopped. She stopped in front of the cage of that bird. Suddenly, I saw the whole thing. The tough butler who said she was sick and searched people for weapons. The fear behind her eyes. The man she just quarreled with about obsessions and symptoms of a sick mind. Martha was insane. I watched while she took the sleeping pill on her fingers and held it through the bars of the cage for the bird. I saw the bird grab it in his beak, but I didn't wait for the rest. Softly as I could, I opened the outer door and went down to the street. Martha was insane. Because she was insane, because she thought people were trying to kill her, I couldn't kill her. Nobody could ever kill her. Hello?
Paul, are you all right?
Alan? Yeah, sure I'm all right. What time is it?
11 o'clock. I just saw the papers.
Saw the papers?
About Martha Lathrop.
What about her?
She's dead. Poisoned.
Poisoned?
They found nitrosine.
But that's impossible. It couldn't be.
I'm afraid it's true, Paul.
Ellen, where are you?
At Gus's.
Wait there.
Paul, let's go away.
With what?
Oh, I've got a little money. Enough to get us to Chicago, maybe Los Angeles. We could change our names and start over again.
Why, Ellen? You think I killed her, don't you?
Paul, if you did, I know why you did. And I don't care.
You're quite a gal, Ellen, but I didn't kill her.
You were there. You said you were going...
Yes, I was, but I didn't kill her, and I can prove it. Don't you believe me?
Okay, paper. Here you are.
Wait a minute. Give me a couple of those.
Yes, sir, here you are. All about the big murder.
Murder?
Yes, sir. Okay, pal, thanks.
Paper, all right, now, Peter.
Okay, take it easy, will you? I gotta make a little toolsome.
Paul.
Yeah.
It wasn't you. Oh, Paul.
Dr. Martin Osterman. It must have been the guy she went out with last night. And they've got him cold.
They quarreled publicly, big restaurant. She said he was trying to poison her. He'd given her the prescription for the sleeping pills that killed her.
Ellen, how would you like to have some real money and earn it? Easy money.
Money?
This Osterman is rich, filthy rich.
But, Paul...
If I can prove I didn't do it, I can prove that he didn't do it.
Harrison, Winters, and Forbes.
Which one is handling the Osterman case?
Why, I'll give you Mr. Harrison.
Hello?
Mr. Harrison?
Yes?
The papers say that you're Dr. Martin Osterman's lawyer, is that right?
Well, yes, that's right. Who is this?
Your client's in a pretty bad way, isn't he?
Look here, I'm not in the habit of speaking over the phone to people that
You'll
I...
You'll speak to me, because I can prove he's innocent.
You can what?
That's what I said, I can prove it.
Well, Mr. whatever your name is, if you have any evidence, I'd certainly be glad if you'd come down to my office and
talk. Well, I'll send somebody else down, my secretary. If you want money.
Well,
$50,000.
$50,000?
Yeah, you get in touch with Dr. Osterman and see if he doesn't think his life is worth that.
What you're suggesting is not only against the law, but I
don't care about the law, and I don't think Osterman will either.
I'll have somebody down there in an hour. Can you arrange it by then?
Well, possibly.
All right. We'll want the money in cash.
Harrison Winters and Forbes.
There's a young lady waiting for this call in Mr. Harrison's office. I want to speak to her.
Oh, yes. Hello?
Paul, Ellen. Have they given you the money?
Yes.
Did you count it?
Yes.
All right, put Harrison on and then start for Grand Central Station.
All right, Paul. He wants to talk to you.
Thank you. Hello?
Mr. Harrison?
Yes.
All right, here's the dope. Martha Lathrop was not murdered. She committed suicide.
What? Suicide?
And here's the proof. She was suffering from delusions. She thought people were trying to kill her, poison her, and so on. Dr. Osman confirms that, of course.
Yes, he...
What he doesn't know is that it had gone so far she was trying out things she ate on that big parrot she had.
The macaw?
Yeah, the butler will confirm that. Anyway, she tried out those sleeping pills in the bird before she took them. And you'll find a dead bird in the house to confirm that.
Good heavens.
So she knew those pills were poisoned before she took them. Martha Lathrop killed herself. I must say they took it like a sport. They paid up and shut up. An hour later, Ellen and I were on a train speeding along the banks of the Hudson River bound for California.
Oh, Paul, $50,000.
Easy money. That must be the easiest money any man ever made in his life. Must have been about 2 weeks after we got to California that I got the phone call.
This Mr. Bentley?
Yeah?
My name's McNulty. I run a pet shop downtown.
Oh, you must have the wrong
number. Oh, no, I don't think so. I got something down here you might be interested in. A bird.
A bird?
Yeah, a macaw. Real beauty. Got a green stripe between his eyes. Makes him look exactly as though he's wearing glasses. You interested?
No. No, I'm...
Oh, I could easily bring him up to show you. I got your address.
No, I said I'm not interested. That night, I told Helen I'd found bugs in the place, so we moved. Two nights later, I was alone, and there was a knock on the door.
I brought the bird anyway, Mr. Bentley. I thought sure you'd want him when you saw him.
Look, I said...
I had quite a time finding where you'd move to, though. Oh, look, isn't he a beauty?
Look, I told you that I...
Did you see one like him before? Oh, they're very rare, very rare.
What made you think I'd want him?
I just thought you would. Don't you want him?
How much?
Well, now, like I say, that's a very rare bird.
500?
Yes, that'd be all right, Mr. Bentley.
Here.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Bentley. And I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Now, get out.
Yes, yes. Good night, Mr. Bentley.
There could be no doubt about it. It was the same bird. I opened the cage and roughed his feathers to see if the markings might have been painted on. Hey! He bit me, but it was the same bird. He sat there staring evilly at me through those spectacles of his, laughing at me. I reached in the cage again. And wrung his neck. I wrapped the body up in a newspaper. I got a shovel out of the garage. I drove about 5 miles up to Panga Canyon and parked in a side road with my lights on. I went down into the canyon and started digging. I dug like a madman. The sweat was running into my eyes and I was gasping for air. And suddenly a light was shining full on my face.
All right, Ben.
Wait. The bird is dead. I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have killed her. The bird is dead! Ellen had nothing to do with it. She thought I was innocent all along.
Okay, we got nothing against her.
But the bird, I...
Well, Bentley, that was what you might call psychological warfare. We knew you were guilty, though, when you bought it.
I mean, the poison.
Oh, we found poison, all right. Still traces on its beak and claws when we got there. But there was one thing we couldn't understand for quite a while. Dr. Dittmars of the Bronx Zoo finally tipped us off.
But if Martha took the poison, I saw her give it to that bird. I saw the bird gobble it up. Why didn't it die?
Yeah. You see, with this nitrazine, some birds can take that stuff by the spoonful, and it won't even faze them. You just picked the wrong kind of poison and the wrong kind of bird.
And so, being of sound mind and somewhat relieved to know it, I do hereby bequeath in this, my last will and testament, witnessed here in the death house at Ossining, New York, on this 7th day of November, to my wife, Ellen, the sum of $48,700. Remainder of that easy money. Hoping that the facts herein set forth will assure her that she has a right to it, since I will shortly, to my regret, have earned every nickel of it.
Well, Ethel, you've done some great Decca records with Ray Bolger. I heard some of them on the radio. I thought we could maybe do one of those songs, you know, like there's a thing you did with him called Deary, or If I Knew You Were Coming, I'd Have Baked a Cake. How about that?
Oh, okay. No, let's do Deary. Huh?
Deary? Fine. We'll give the folks a little memory lesson here and see how far they go back.
Deary.
Oh, Deary. Deary,
Do you remember when we waltzed to the Sousa band? My, wasn't the music grand? Chowder parties down by the seashore. Every 4th of July, test your memory, my dearie.
Let me hear from you.
Do you recall when Henry Ford couldn't even fix a running board under a Chandler 6? Dearie,
I drove an Essex.
Life
myself.
Was cheery in the good old days gone by. Do you remember?
Ah, yes.
Well, if you remember,
I remember.
Then, dearie, you're much older than I.
What kind of a switch is this? All right. Wait a minute, I'm warming up. Deary. Oh, dearie. Donna Michi gets better cues than that. Go ahead. Same thing. Ah, dearie, do you remember when most gents owned a pair of spats, winged collar and derby hats? Lovely ladies swinging their bustles made those gentlemen sigh. Test your memory, my dearie.
I'm testing.
Do you remember watching John L. win every fight? 'Cause nobody ducked from Sullivan's right. Dearie, life was cheery in those good old days gone by. Do you remember?
Of course I do.
If you remember.
How do you think I am?
Well, dearie, you're much older than I.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Well, we'll see.
Come in. Let me hear from you.
Dearie, Do you remember when we sat up all night together?
Oh, yes. Pittsburgh on the crystal sets. Keystone movies. We got Coogan and Chaplin.
They made you laugh and then cry. Test your memory, my dearie.
I'm racking my brain.
Do you recall when Gilda Gray did the shimmy shake
that started the San Francisco quake?
You mean fire, dearie. Life was cheery
in those good old days gone by.
Do you remember?
Yes, I remember.
dearie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how they loved Harry Lauderdale?
Yes, my wasn't the palace pet.
Jenny Lind, presented by Barnum.
She sang her sweet lullabies. Test your memory, my dearie.
Chicago all in flames.
Well, it sure caused a terrific row.
And they blamed it on Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
Well, life was cheery.
In the good old days gone by. La, da, da, da. Remember,
oh, yes.
Well, if you remember,
Jenny dear,
then dearie, you're much older than I.
Moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.